video of that guy that's like, he's like chatting to, he's getting interviewed, and then he just puts the whole microphone in his mouth. That's the energy I want to bring. Yeah, I think I said on a video with Sam and Adam just now, we're talking about captains. Bro, I went off on a captain tangent. I was like, yeah, I think Declan Rice can be a captain, but not sure about Jorginho. Oh, here they come. Judging by your laughter, we're recording, so it's always... good. All right, welcome back to the Every Other Monthly podcast. I am Jay McIntosh. I'm joined by
Every Other I Hate Football podcast.
Every Other, I work in football now, so don't listen to football podcasts, but do a football podcast. Daniel Child, how you doing, mate? You all right?
Yeah, I'm doing fine.
I do want to caveat, yeah, this intro. I don't get told, or the way we record, it doesn't show or say anything when we start recording. So every time I've ever listened back to a podcast, I'm like, yeah, this is when we started speaking. Okay, great. Okay, great. Well, yeah, okay. So basically, football's been going on.
Football's been going on. What a great insight. Football's been happening.
We don't skirt around the edges in this podcast. But yeah, I know a lot of people who will listen to this, it will probably, you know, want a lot of Chelsea sort of centric conversation. I'm kind of more keen to avoid that, if anything. Like, it literally is something we do all day, every day in a professional capacity now. Hence why these podcasts have, well, they're called Every Other Sunday. Yeah, you get what you're given. But like, they come out when they come out, and they're not very regularly at the moment. But I want to talk about West Ham. And I don't just want to talk about Declan Rice, but I want to talk about West Ham. I don't know if there's a team in Europe that has impressed me more than West Ham this season. Like, based off of expectation and where they currently are and how well they're doing, it's absolutely amazing to see. And I'm really happy for David Moyes. And what it does is it shows that you can teach an old dog new tricks, in a sense. Like, he took time out, he went and studied under great coaches, and has come back with a sort of hybrid sexy German / classic Barclays style of football that I just love to see. And, you know, I think in the Premier League, I think the best midfield partnership is Suchek and Rice. I think in European football, I think Kante and Jorginho is the best partnership. But I think in the Premier League, week in, week out, I think Suchek and Rice are incredible. I'm going to be so interested to see how and if they recruit in January. Thoughts?
Yeah, they've been so impressive. I was saying this whilst watching, obviously, the Liverpool game. Better than the sum of their parts. I think they're kind of the extreme version of that currently. Is that I assumed with the addition of European football, it was really going to hurt them. Now, it may take its toll later in the season. They're kind of coping very well at the moment, juggling both. Maybe as we get into December, January, February, that'll take its time. I just think they're such a fun team to watch. I think they've just got so many fun players. And Suchek and Rice, like, just a brilliantly effective team is the best way I can describe them. Like, Moyes has maximised every bit of talent and goal scoring and, you know, whatever it is, defence, midfield, attack. Like, I just feel like that is a maximised team. You know, you compare them to, say, Man United, which is just the polar opposite example in European football at the moment, or PSG, for instance, where it's just like a bunch of superstars. We've got no idea how we're going to use them, but whatever. Compared to a team like West Ham, who have some really good talented... I'm looking at their 11, right? Kurt Zouma, who I think's top-class centre-back. I really do. I think he's going to be... Now he's getting week in, week out football. I think he's going to develop into
He's perfectly designed centre-back for the Premier League as well.
He really is. And then, you know, Suchek, Rice, we've spoken enough on this podcast since it began about Declan Rice, but he's just gone up to another level. You look at all the stats, he's top, you know, he's just a top European footballer in his position. There's just no denying it now. And Suchek, what a signing. And Jared Bowen, I remember watching him in the championship for Hull, scored a load of goals. They brought him in.
Yeah.
And sometimes the adaptation period is a little bit awkward and you may not get the same sort of output from that player, but Jared Bowman is a really fun player to watch. I think he's really developed. Benrahma, took
him a bit longer. I think it took Jared Bowen, got it quicker, didn't he? Kind of, as soon as you mentioned Jared Bowen, I was like, it's taken Benrahma a bit of time, because I know you and I were both interested in him at Chelsea. At points,
I think maybe more because Bowen was like the standout player at quite a poor whole team compared to Ben Rama, who was in a very settled system under Thomas Frank at Brentford. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was a little bit different, but he's now flying. Fornals, who was a player they've had for several years, feels like he's hit another gear. I just adore Mikel Antonio. I think he is a wonderful centre forward. Just truly superb. For years I've been saying I would have him at Chelsea, but I think he deserves to play week in, week out in the Premier League. But I think he'd be an amazing backup option for Chelsea. So what a player he is. And I'm so happy for Moyes, because we all do it in football. We write off players, we write off managers. You know, I think a lot of us would have after the Sunderland debacle where they go down and Moyes was there, and it'll look quite bad for him, especially after the Man United failure.
And he stunk at Real Sociedad as well.
Yeah, now he's adapted. He's found new ways, and it's great to see that he's kind of fighting against the tide of modern football in a weird way, like in terms of what you expect a young progressive coach. Well, to me, like West Ham, that is a progressive vision. That club had been meandering about for years. You know, the London Stadium had really created a conflict with their supporters. But now they've got a team there that feels like it's fighting for them, that represents them. And it, as well, is a difficult game. I couldn't quite believe all the analysis pre-game to that Liverpool clash that, like, Liverpool were just going to turn up and wipe them aside. Like, I can never get that, because West Ham is a tough game. It's a really, really tough game. Oh, like, I'm scared when Chelsea play them.
Yeah, because they'll win. Because Declan Rice has scored twice, and it'll just kill Chelsea Twitter completely. It will kill everyone completely when that happens. Right, listen, are there any other teams in the Premier League that have sort of stood out to you this year? Because I have a load of teams that have impressed me on the continent that I do want to talk about a little bit. But do you have any sort of within the Premier League? I think actually Wolves, after a slow start to the season, have really kicked on. I think Hwang Hee-chan is a very, very good player. It's nice to see him and his back. I still think Adama Traore is overrated, but he is still effective nonetheless. I've been very impressed with them. I think obviously Brentford, but I feel as though it's a bit boring to mention Brentford. And surprises don't always have to be good. I think Leeds have been underwhelming. Although I would have Rafinha at Chelsea. Thoughts?
Well, I can't believe you didn't say Brighton. Seventh place, level 1 points with Man United. The XG Kings have turned it around. They should have beaten Newcastle on Saturday, but the XG Kings have turned it around. So happy for Graham Potter. I find it hilarious and a nice story if it is to be believed that he rejected the Spurs job in the summer.
Yeah, but that's good foresight, isn't it? Because for a person like him, who quite clearly his system is indicative of a control freak, and I mean this in a nice way, at Tottenham, and this is why the Conte thing won't work, and this is why I think this will be the only airtime we give to Conte in this podcast, because we both love him, but it's quite clearly like at some point someone's going to drop the match in the fireworks box and it's all going to go off, and he likes to be in control, and there's only so much Levy's going to satiate him before he has to remind Conte who is in charge at Tottenham. I do want to say as well, because it happened today, we're recording on, it doesn't even matter what day it is, but we're recording. Eddie Howe, Newcastle manager, that's stinking. His track record of signing players is horrific, to say the least. I don't ever think I've seen him coach a decent defence, and Newcastle are definitely getting relegated.
I think he's a better coach than you give him credit for, but I do agree, maybe the style of football isn't good for a team looking not to get relegated. I wonder if Eddie Howe at Norwich would have been a better fit.
100%, 100%. His talent acquisition is so poor. It's so bad. He spent 30 million on Jefferson Lerma at Bournemouth, 22 million on Ake, 21 million on Solanke, 18 million on Jordan Ibe.
I've got to say, I like the homegrown route he's gone down, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
how I do transfers.
Get him at Chelsea. Yeah, but like that's not giving me much confidence. And I think as well for Newcastle, like, which teams are worse than Newcastle in the Premier League? I honestly don't think there are any. And I think if St. Maximin gets injured, there definitely aren't any. Like, even Norwich are above them in the table now, right?
Are they not? They're level 1 points.
Right.
Level points with... it's hurt me again. So you've got Norwich at the bottom with 5, Newcastle with 5, and Burnley with 8 points. And then above them, you've got Watford and Aston Villa with 10 points, Leeds with 11. And it kind of shows you how quickly things can change in the Premier League, because Brentford are on 12.
Yeah, but I think all those teams you've named are better than Newcastle. Even Watford. Yeah. I do think
Watford got more goals in them.
They are a perennial mess, Watford, but they are a better team than Newcastle. And the thing is, you know what's mad as well? If you look at the Championship, how well Bournemouth, Fulham, West Brom, in fairness, are doing, I think if Newcastle go down with the squad they have currently, they wouldn't come back up. No, I'm not joking.
But do you think they could take the piss if like their owners really like invest all of the money and then they win like 45 out of 46 games and it's just a bit of
like
a joke?
Like when Wolves signed Neves, the Porto captain, Champions League player, took him to the champ. Maybe, because Newcastle fans deserve a good time. It's just, I don't know. I really think that squad has been running to the ground and it's a bit of a sad state of affairs, to be honest. But yeah, Brighton, like we started this conversation with, killing it. Cucurella is an incredible signing. It's nice to see Lallana, you know, have his time back in the spotlight. I always thought he was a good player. Needed to be a bigger fish at a smaller pond. I do think somewhere, I know we just link Barkley everywhere, but I think the way Potter plays football, and we're talking about Barkley takes one too many touches, and that was something Lampard and Jody Morris said. I think Potter might be a coach that could get something really out of him. And if he he's got Danny Welbeck amongst the goals. Like, if you can get Danny Welbeck amongst the goals, you can certainly get Ross Barkley doing something, because I think currently Ross Barkley is obviously the better player. So a lot of teams are impressing me. I hear a lot that the Premier League's not very good, or there are some teams that are not very, like, I think the Premier League's really quite decent this year. And I think a lot of the teams are pretty competitive. Some bore me to death, like Everton. I don't really know what the point is.
It is funny that, like, Benitez is getting turned on already.
Obviously, mate. He's getting monsters. My dad still called him beneath us when he won trophies.
I love it. Yeah. So, I do like the fact that at least I think Everton fans are going to have more credit with Benitez than, what was the comparison? I think it was Mourinho with United fans. Like, after years of slating him, they were perfectly happy for Jose to come in. And like with Chelsea fans, it was like, no, like we ain't supporting you, bruv. Like, just,
You said we got the receipts.
This was a pre-receipt. Chelsea had the receipts before the receipts became a relevant thing on social media.
You know, like in cartoons where they get the receipt out and it just drops and it goes like rolls along the floor. It's just, oh, Benitez, we've got the receipts. Right, listen, I'm going to take us out of England. So in Germany, the Bundesliga, you know I like it. Obviously, Union are doing really well. They're in eighth. Taiwo Awoniyi is a player that I really, really recommend people look at. He is such a good player, bro. So good. Young striker. I believe he's sort of, he's got the fifth most goals in the Bundesliga so far on seven, which isn't bad in 11 games. Obviously, Lewandowski's got 13. There's a player called Genki Haraguchi that's got four assists for Union Berlin. It's very good as well. I was looking earlier. Upamecano has the fourth most assists in the Bundesliga this season, which I just think is a crazy stat. In the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Well, in the top 9, obviously, assisters in the Bundesliga, three of them are from Bayern Munich. Müller's got 8 assists. What a crazy football player he is. And Freiburg as well. Freiburg, who have always been a sort of struggling team. They're third, and they're comfortably third at the moment.
Haven't they just moved into a new stadium?
I think so, yeah. But like, they're doing excellently. Like, Mönchengladbach are in ninth. Eintracht in 14th, absolutely stinking down there. Leverkusen and Leipzig as well, sort of 5th and 6th. So it's interesting what's going on there. I was looking at Serie A as well. Obviously, Juventus in 8th, which is the nicest thing to look at because it's so boring when one team has a monopoly of everything. But Napoli, bro. Napoli and AC Milan are top of that league by 7 points. How good? I mean, out of those two teams, who would you rather win it?
AC Milan, I would, because Fikayo Tomori and Olivier Giroud, I want to see.
Oh, Fikayo Tomori, yeah, big fic.
I don't want to see Zlatan with it, but like Fikayo and Giroud, I think it'd be nice. It's been interesting. Obviously, I have watched more Serie A football this year than I have in probably all of my life, for obvious reasons, mainly Roma games. I watched a lot of Roma this season. Because of one world-class number 9 who scored yet again on Sunday. Chelsea could have done with a player like that on Saturday, but we'll brush over that.
Less said the better, mate. Also, Giovanni Simeone, yeah, Diego Simeone's son, is the second top scorer in the Bundesliga at the moment. He scored 4 goals the other week. And then against Juventus, scored twice. And this, if you've not seen it, go and watch the Hellas Verona versus Juventus highlights. It is an exceptional goal. Do you remember like old school FIFA finesse shot from outside the box, top bins?
Keeper, it's one of those goals where you watch it from a distance and the camera angle is perfect because I remember Frank once hit a shot against Everton where the moment it left his boot, you knew it was heading into the top corner. And there's nothing the keeper can do. It's in there. And I did see that goal, actually, because I have been watching a lot of Juventus, just of how awful they've been.
So, they really have been awful.
And I couldn't believe looking at the table and seeing how far they were away from first place. I don't know if that's going to change. I know they've had...
They're 16 points off of first place.
Which is bigger than the last week I saw them. So, yeah, I mean, that's... It's an awful place to be, and Chelsea really need to do them in the game coming up after the international break.
Yeah, they've got 7 points in the last 15 possible points, so that's absolutely dreadful. And to be honest, I don't really know what's going on at Juventus, but I like the fact that it's crumbling. I like Juventus as a club, but the fact, you know what I mean, someone else needs to win it. And if Milan win it, that will be unbelievable. And with Inter... If they can get out of their group in the Champions League, that's a massive, massive step for them because obviously they won the league last season, but they lost Lukaku. Dzeko's done really, really well this season, stepping up. I think he's a second or third top scorer in the league. And they're 3 points ahead of Atalanta sitting in third in Inter. So if they can get out of the Champions League group, then fair play to Inzaghi. I think Milan and Napoli are really coming together. Victor Osimhen's playing incredibly as well, as is Lorenzo Insigne. Insigne, bear in mind, is out of contract at the end of the season and he's 30 years old. Are there any teams that he could really go to outside of Italy? Any Prem teams that Insigne could go to as like a little stab in the dark?
I feel like I had the similar feelings about Dries Mertens at Napoli.
Yeah, I remember when he was linked to Chelsea heavily.
He's kind of a smaller, same with Insigne, like they kind of are smaller forwards. So in terms of the Premier League, I'm not quite sure where they best fit. It's not that small forwards can't obviously perform well in the Premier League. I just think that sometimes that can...
He's 5'4".
Like that can be sometimes be really difficult to overcome. So
he's going to get dusted, mate.
I don't know, maybe he stays within Syria. Maybe he goes to Germany. Because I think everyone should go and play in German football, to be honest.
Yeah, I do as well. Have you seen the Ligue 1 table? It's magnificent. So obviously PSG are 10 points ahead, right? No one cares about them. But Lens are in second with 24 points. Nice are third. Bear in mind, Lille won it last year. Christophe Galtier left Lille, went to Nice, which is where he was at before, and has taken Nice back up to third since obviously Patrick Vieira has now gone to Palace, who we should probably talk about in a second. And the weirdest team, I think, in the world is Marseille. I don't understand why that team seems so violent. All of their players just have, you know, those like nasty streaks. Like Guendouzi's so peak. I do not like Guendouzi at all. Especially after what he said to Mupai last season. But like, it's just weird. Like Monaco in 11th. And I know that you don't look at, you can have amazing players at poor teams. But when I look at Monaco in 11th and West Ham in 3rd, and I look at who's standing out in those two teams, I don't really know why Chelsea would pay 45 million for Tchouameni when you could pay 80 million for Rice, who's quite clearly top 3 DMs in the world.
I still think Tchouameni is going to be a great buy for someone.
100%, bro. Tchouameni is who genuinely is someone, if Tielemans left Leicester, be a great shout.
No, I've said this before, like Tchouameni is the type of player that Leicester buys. Like they just 100%, it's a very smart signing that I could see a team making. Like I would like Chelsea to buy both of them because I just think they'd set up the future of our midfield for a very long time. But it's surprising to see Monaco down there, considering they were nearer the top last season.
Yeah, Niko Kovac, good coach as well.
So I think Tchouameni will get a move. The fact that he's now started his international career with France as well. He played alongside Pogba in the Nations League and looked really good in both games, especially the final against Spain, where of course France won. I thought just individually he looked so good there. So he's gonna get a good move.
I feel like, do you know what? I feel like someone like Tchouaméni, and maybe it's just because he's outside the Premier League. Like, can you imagine him in a pivot or in a three with Camavinga and Fede Valverde at Real Madrid when Kroos and Modric eventually peter out? Although, to be fair, I was listening to Sid Lowe speak relatively recently, and when asked who the best player in the league was, he said obviously Benzema. And then he said Luka Modric still. And he said watching Modric, it's like the guy creates space out of nothing. And I just think...
I may have listened to the same podcast where he says like he was watching it from like the touchline, like the press box,
quite low.
Will like send three or four opponents the wrong way, and suddenly Modric will have the ball in space. Yeah, he's an incredible player.
And like, I think if you're Tchouaméni, I think he's a little less combative than Rice, and therefore it'd be nice for him to be surrounded by players where he can be a bit more like that. It's like, almost as though if AC Milan could get hold of him next season and play him alongside Tonali, because Tonali has been brilliant this season and he was not good last season. Take it back to England, because we're going to keep this short and sweet. Salah's the best player in the world. Thoughts? Daniel cannot say anything nice about Liverpool at all. I can say... He is the best player in the world. Maybe João Cancelo is the best player in the world, but no, Salah has been exceptional. Like we did where we sort of highlighted teams maybe 10-15 minutes ago, we spoke about Antonio, we spoke about Rice, spoke about Bowen, Benrahma. Obviously we've given West Ham plenty of flowers, but which players so far this season have really impressed you outside of Chelsea? Because I think we can go into more detail about Chelsea another time.
I think Bernardo Silva has come back into some amazing form for Man City. Yeah. I thought in the 18-19 season he was incredible. But then maybe he's kind of, I don't know if it's lessened in influence, because obviously Pep rotates players in and out. And sometimes, because he rotates so frequently, sometimes players just can't get that natural rhythm maybe. And you forget the talent that City have. Like someone like John Stones has barely played this season. And yeah, I know the levels that he can get to as a centre-back. But I watched him, obviously, Bernardo Silva. I saw his performance, obviously, against Chelsea, his performance against Brighton. I watched that. I haven't watched a ton of full City games this season, but then his performance as well against Man United at the weekend. Yeah, just fun player to watch, really influential, just so fits into what Pep wants. I mean, just Pep's team is just... I was watching him against Man United, and I know as everything now, it's always about looking at the opponent and saying how awful they were, but just I just adore watching Pep's system, the way how fluid it is, how in and out of possession, how it moves, and it goes from a three at the back in possession sometimes to a four, the way how players are so confident to move around. There's always a player available for a pass. It's just the complete realization of Pep's philosophy at Man City. You know, it's just they have reached peak. It doesn't mean they're going to win the league this season, but they just reached peak Pep. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's
100%.
And it's great to see it at such an elite level, a coach given that power and time to fully realize his vision. So
yeah, they're flawlessly free jazz, aren't they?
Yeah, and obviously Bernardo Silva is a part of that. We already mentioned West Ham, and obviously Antonio. I think there's a few West Ham players you can pick up there. Even though I still have my doubts about him defensively, I find the positioning of Alexander-Arnold really interesting. I wonder if like Klopp is, and I think he probably should, because I think it's going to cost him. Because at the moment, it looks to me like Alexander-Arnold is kind of starting playing this like central midfield, right central midfield role. He's so advanced up the pitch. I wonder if he may change the system, or he may have already changed the system, and when it looks like a four at the back, it's actually a three at the back. But I think you need someone behind Alexander-Arnold now, because it's
I was thinking
a wing-back position. If he played in Chelsea system as a wing-back...
You're reading my mind, bro. I was literally going to say, if he played his right wing-back with Reece right centre-back, it'd be over for everyone. And maybe England should think about doing that, because... If Trent's defensive responsibility is reduced, he is the best crosser of the ball in the world. I think he's the best. Yeah. I don't even know if that's not a hot take. That's just facts. That's absolute facts. Like, he's the best crosser, arguably the best long passer. Like, he's really back to his best in that sense. But because Liverpool is sort of, let's play a really high line, let's really push. You can get in behind them if you can get past the sort of suffocating way that they play. But yeah, Trent's been excellent. I've been really impressed with Emile Smith Rowe. Absolutely loving watching Emile Smith Rowe. I mean, Arsenal are weird. But I said at the start of the season, I might have said on this podcast that they're going to come fifth. So, you know, they are fifth currently. And I think that's probably their ceiling. Maybe they can push for fourth because United are a shambles. But West Ham are... If West Ham can maintain this form, then fair play to them. I don't think they'll maintain quite such a close proximity with sort of Chelsea, Liverpool, City. But I do think that West Ham are now serious, serious top four contenders. And if Antonio gets injured or if Declan Rice gets injured, then the whole thing changes. But yeah, I don't know. I think.
Could we talk about, before we wrap up this episode, could we talk about how much of a clusterfuck Man United are at the moment?
Yes. It would be such an interesting case study for like tacticians and man managers and all of that stuff in a few years' time. It's really bizarre. It's so bizarre because everyone knows what's going on. What's going on is Ollie's close with the Glazers, but also I feel a bit as though Ollie's been hung out to dry and he's been left as the target whilst the owners go around and do their thing. But like that you said with Pep, mate, it goes to show that individual brilliance is now no longer able to compete with exceptional tactics. And it never really has, but there have been teams, I think Zidane's Real Madrid, where the individual cohesion was so good and they did work together so well that they could blitz anyone. But like Ronaldo, you know, give him a chance, he'll finish it, but you can outplay them to a point where he won't get chances. Do you know what I mean? And they've been an absolute shambles, as have Spurs. I don't know who's been more of a shambles out of the two of them, to be honest. I think probably Spurs. It's just Man United is so huge that they get the credit.
It's bizarre to me, a lot of the debates around Man United, because I find it all quite funny in the sense that it's so boring at this point how you get people going, like a lot of the ex-pros, whether it's, you know, Roy Keane or even, you know, non-United people like Graham Souness, the old trope is, this is Man United. And what that quote, I think the intention of that quote is, oh, go back to when Ferguson was here. But like, when I think of Man United now, I think of a squad that's unbalanced, prioritises glamour signings over what's best for the squad, doesn't really have the most coherent plan behind the scenes. It's about the brand. It's about buying the most glamorous players. The kind of feeling that we're the biggest club in the world. And there's kind of a safety net there because of the amount of money they make from sponsorships and how big they are. Mm. The Glazers know they don't have to be Premier League champions to be the big club or to be the most successful, financially successful club. So that's what I think of Man United. To me, it's... when people talk about them competing with Man United, Chelsea, Liverpool, I just don't think the ownership cares that much about that when it comes to the end of the day. I don't think it's not at the same level as someone like Roman, for instance, who, for whatever you say about him, I don't think it's an exercise in vanity. I think it's an exercise in his decision-making constantly is what is going to get Chelsea back to the top of the Premier League. Or
he likes winning. Football. Yeah. He loves football. Yeah, 100%.
For me, with the Glazers, it's like, what is, you know, it's about collecting as many superstar names to create a team that, as I've referenced before, looks like the Harlem Globetrotters. You know, look, we've got Fernandes, we've got Ronaldo, we've got Pogba, we've got Rashford, we've got
Sancho.
Sancho, you go through all the names. It doesn't feel like a coherent team. And Solskjaer is obviously a problem tactically because it's just so incoherent what they're doing. It's a bit like, I don't know, if a president is a reflection of the time in the United States, a manager or a head coach is a reflection of the hierarchy at times as well. Mm. And that's what Solskjaer is. He's a reflection of the just lack of football intelligence behind the scenes. And I kind of feel like he'll get sacked. And the reason he's not getting sacked at the moment is because of the lack of competence behind the scenes. There's no plan B. There's no one coming in. They've passed on so many good coaches.
Okay. I also think there's arrogance with it, you know. There's a level of arrogance. Same with Spurs. Like, if Daniel Levy had an actual footballing brain, he'd say to Brendan Rodgers or Graham Potter, here's the money, I will give you this much time to see what you can do, here we go. But the snobbery is such snobbery. Obviously Conte is excellent, but he's not there for a long time. Like, if Man United were humble in that sense, were owned in a humble way, do you know how good Brendan Rodgers is as a coach? Like, it's only because he's called Brendan Rodgers that he doesn't get the credit. Look how good Leicester. Obviously, there's the links to Ralph Rangnick. And I can't lie, if Rangnick goes to United, we're all done for. Because he is just, he is incredible. But yeah, United have been a shambles, absolute shambles. And, you know, whether, the debate as to whether Ronaldo's helped them or not is, it's sort of irrelevant because the problems would still be there regardless, right? But I feel like Ronaldo is just there to show that, hey, we're still here. We're still able to do this. We're still able to get the big players. But I don't really feel like anyone cares. And United are just a bit boring, aren't they? So, right, listen, there's a perfect place to wrap it now. We will be back next week and we're going to go into Chelsea players that have been out on loan, looking a bit more into certain Chelsea players that have impressed us this season, a couple loanies, and some other things that we haven't quite thought of just yet, but we'll think of on the spot when we start speaking. But yeah, we're back. We'll be back. Well, I don't know. When we'll be back. We do podcasts when we want to do podcasts. Yeah, you get what you deserve. You get what you're given. You don't complain about it, yeah? It is what it is. This is totalitarian podcasting at its finest. I am Jay McIntosh, been joined as ever by the wonderful Daniel Childs, and we'll catch you guys next time. Play it out loud in the car. I don't know if you like or whatever podcast, but just listen to it. Thank you so much for listening. See you later.